he was confronted with Esav coming with his group of Arba Me'asishimo, he thought he was coming to start up with him. So he prepared himself for Shlosha Dvorim, for Dorim, for Tvila, and for Melchama. In life, we always have a chayva to do hishtadlos. You shouldn't think that the shidduch is going to fly down from heaven. You have to call up the girl and make a date. You have to propose to the girl. You have to apply for a job. People have to do some hishtadlos. Things are not going to happen by themselves. And after doing all the hishtadlos, then a person has to daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara, in the end of Maseches Nida, says, what should a person do to get rich? The Gemara says, you should invest in A, B, C, and then you should daven. What should a person do? That he should be blessed with healthy children. He should do A, B, C, and then he should daven. The Gemara says, every step of the way in life, you have to do hishtadlos, then you have to daven. But part of the hishtadlos over here was that that Yaakov Avinu chanfes Esav. He keeps on referring to him as Adoni. 8 times he refers to him as Adoni, my master. The Gemara has a whole sugya in Maseches Sota. The Mishnah says that Mishnah has all the dinim of Hakel. So on one occasion, Agrippus HaMelech was laning Hakel, and then he got to the pasuk that says, "Losuchu losuzarachu ishnachir shalo achichahu." Now that appoint one who's a ger or who's an eved, and he laned that, so he felt he's not right to be the melech. So the chachamim at that time patted him on the back and said, "It's okay, achinamata. It's okay." It wasn't okay. It was against the din. If the person realizes that he's doing something shaloi kedin, so he should talk and tell him, "You're doing shaloi kedin. You shouldn't be the melech." So instead, they chant for him. So the Gemara says, "Bosa shon eschayvu sanem shal yisol kloya." They deserve to be punished seriously because of chanifa. And the Gemara has a whole discussion about chanifa. Chanifa means when you pat the rush on the back. Every yeshiva does this. They have some person who's married to a non-Jewish woman. A person doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't keep kashrus. Then he makes a big donation to the yeshiva or to the movement, the institution, whatever it is. And then they make him the guest of honor. And they say, "Wow, the man is going to go straight to Olam Haba. How can he go straight to Olam Haba? He's in Mechal Shabbos, Eved Avodah Zarah, whatever. He's married to a non-Jewish woman. Goes to church. How is he going to go to Olam Haba?" So they lead the person on to believe that it's okay, that his style of living is okay. As long as he just gives money to the yeshiva or to this institution, everything will be forgiven. So the Gemara says, in a certain sense, that's a violation of Lifnei Velisite Michshol. If the real Lifnei Iver is when you set him up to do the Avera, you encourage a person to do Avera. Here the guy's doing the Avera on his own, but you pat him on the back. So you mislead him into believing that his style of living is okay.
We just saw the Gemara and share about how all these different rabbis would go to a lot of means to make sure someone wouldn't be embarrassed, to cover up the Avera, right? It's put in the Tochacha. So when we say you should cover up and not mention it to embarrass them, and when is it called Chanifa?
He doesn't. The person is doing something wrong. A slight avera doesn't deserve to be humiliated. He realizes that he did something wrong, but you don't pat him on the back to say that everything is fine. So Moshe Feinstein has a discussion in his sefer. Let's say Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, people come to shul who would normally not come all year long. They don't daven all year long. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur they come. So Moshe has a whole discussion. You're not allowed to give him psicha. You're not allowed to give him hagdan glila. You're not allowed to give him an aliyah. That's also called Chanifa L'Rishayim. That's a question, how far do you go? But Chanifa L'Rishayim means if you say, you praise the person that he's such a tzaddik, and he knows himself he's not a tzaddik, so he's fooled into believing that he's going to go straight to Adam Habo, he doesn't have to change his way. So that's a problem. So the Gemara has the whole sugya about the seriousness of the Yisur of Chanifa, because it's a branch of Lifnei V'Lisiti Michshol. Then the Gemara comes to the conclusion, Mutal Hachne Frishoim Bo'elam Azeh. Why? The Raya is from Yaakov Avinu, that he keeps on referring to Esav as Adoni Esav. 8 times he refers to him as Adoni. So what do you mean, Mutal Hachne Frishoim Bo'elam Azeh? So when is there an Esav Lachne Frishoim Bo'elam Abo? The whole discussion is Bo'elam Azeh. So why is it all of a sudden Mutal? The Tosis explains, if you think that there's a suffix Sakonis Nefoshes, here he was afraid that Esav was coming to kill him. He has to hunt for him. It's an Aver like all the other Averis. It's not from the Gimel Averis Achamuris that you should say Yehorig Valyava. So that's what the Gemara means, the Maskana. Even though there is a serious Isser in Hanifa Lerushaim, but Boilam Azeh, B'mokim Suffix Sakonis. Suffix Sakonis Nefoshes, Mutalach Nefoshaim Boilam Azeh. Okay. But one should avoid Chanif or Lushaim whenever there's no suffix Akana. Rashi quotes the famous comment from the Medrash. Rashi made it famous. And Lov and Garti. Garti is the same letters as Taryag. Lov and Garti, but Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. So, first of all, how is it possible to keep Taryag Mitzvahs and Chutz Lords? It's impossible for any Jew to observe all the Taryag Mitzvahs. There's some mitzvahs that are only on Kohanim. Some mitzvahs only on Levim, some mitzvahs only on Yisraelim, some mitzvahs only on the Melech, some mitzvahs only on the non-Melech. How is it possible for anybody to fulfill all the mitzvahs? So usually we say, those Hasidim, before they perform a mitzvah, they say, Hinnim Mucharim Zunokayim, mitzvahs, whatever. You say, B'Shem Kol Yisrael. What do you mean, B'Shem Kol Yisrael? I'm doing the mitzvah on behalf of the entire Jewish nation. So if you have a Melech, and you have Kohanim, and you have Levim, and you have Yisraelim, and everybody's fulfilling the mitzvahs that they're obligated to do, and everybody does it, b'shem kol yisrael, so everybody's all together, and everybody's here to all the mitzvahs. Here there were no kaham levim. There was no melech. How can he possibly fulfill all the tayag mitzvahs? How is that possible? So that's one question. And then furthermore, what is Esav is interested in hearing how Purim Yankel Avinu is, that he tells him he fulfilled all the tayag mitzvahs. So the Mefarshim say, it's a question whether this is... correct or not, the Mefarshim say, the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Megillah, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham Avinu is going to give him Eretz Yisrael, so Avraham Avinu asks, B'ma'eda ki yirashenu. So Pasha Pshat is, how do I know they're going to keep your word? Maybe you're going to double cross me. That's the Pshat, B'ma'eda ki yirashenu. So the Gemara, the one Medrash says that Avraham Avinu was punished for saying, B'ma'eda, how do I know that you're going to keep your word? And the Gemara in the end of Megillah, the last Amud Beis in Megillah, so the Gemara says that that's not what it means. The Gemara understands Bameida Beis Eschus, which particular mitzvah should my descendants, should I or my children, my descendants, be careful about to make sure that we have the schus to maintain Eretz Yisrael. So Kodesh Baruch Hu tells him, the schus hakrovus hakarbonus, kach choli egnu mishaleshes v'ayim mishulosh v'sor v'goizol, means the schus hakrovus hakarbonus. So then the Gemara continues that Avraham Avinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this part of it, there's no remez in the Chumash. So the Gemara has just a tradition. Then Avraham Avinu asks, what's going to be this banshein beis hamikdash kayim? So you can't bring any karbanos. So what's chus that my children and my descendants have to maintain Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Navi, a few psukim in Navi like that. Shalom so saying that this banshein beis hamikdash kayim. When you talk about akrobas akarbanos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ma'al ani aleim kilu hikriv. I will consider it as if they offered the korbanos. So there's a big diun. This haftoche only applies with respect to korbanos and with respect to building Beis HaMikdash. There's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. So there also, the Midrashim say, Bizman hazeh, we don't have the ability to build the Beis HaMikdash. So if we learn those Mishnayos about the Mishnayis Midos, about the measurements of the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll learn the halachas about building Beis HaMikdash, our Kodesh Baruch will consider it as if we fulfilled that mitzvah. That's to the best of our ability. We fulfilled it. We learned the halachas. So this idea of an Asham Mepharim so saying is only on Purim, only on Akrobas HaKarbonis, and on Binyan Beis HaMikdash, or does it apply to any mitzvah? Let's say under the communists, they weren't able to lick tefillin, they weren't able to eat matzah, they weren't able to fulfill a lot of mitzvahs. So would you say, let them learn the dinim of achilas matzah, let them learn the dinim of kriyas haTorah, and let them learn the dinim of tefillin, malin on the aleim, as if they fulfilled the mitzvah? You say, no, it's only with respect to karbonis. So the Chafetz Chaim has a whole little conscience about the significance of learning kochim. He published the Sefer Asif HaZikainim on Kochim. He encouraged everyone to learn Kochim. He felt that Mashiach is on his way and the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built, so we have to learn Kochim. So he published the Achreinim, the Likot of Achreinim on Asif HaZikainim, the Likot on the Birchus HaZevach with the Tzayin Kadoshim, all in one volume. So he wrote an introduction about the significance of learning Seder Kochim. So he quotes the Rishonim and say it's only on Karbonis, and others add on karbonis and binyan beis hamikdash, but other mitzvahs not. But others disagree. The Mabit and the Sefer Kiryas Sefer, Mabit was together with the Beis Yosef and the Bezin and Tzfat. Mabit was the bar plukta of the Beis Yosef. So the Mabit writes that it applies to all mitzvahs. So some say that that's how Yaakov Avinu was able to say Lovan Garti Tarigam Mitzvah Shamarti. How did he fulfill all the Taryag Mitzvahs? It's impossible. He learned all the halachas. He learned all the halachas of all the Taryag Mitzvahs. Malani aleim kilu hikrivim. If that's the best he can do under the circumstances, so that's a partial fulfillment of the mitzvah. And why is Esav interested in hearing that Yaakov Avinu fulfilled all the Taryag Mitzvahs? So the Mefarshim explained that Yaakov Avinu was trying to tell Esav, don't start off with me. I have the schus of Liman HaTorah, I have the schus of Shmiras HaMitzvahs. And the mitzvahs are megan on people. Liman HaTorah is megan, and Kiyum HaMitzvahs is megan. So he tells, he's implying to Esav that in case you want to start up with me, it's not a smart thing because I have the schus of Shmiras HaMitzvahs. And then he sends him this tremendous gift, Limtzachem D'Einecha. When he heard that Esav is coming, the Arba Me'asir Shimo, Vayur Yak Miyod Vayetzelo, he was very frightened. Rashi quotes also from the Medrash Rabbah, Vayur Yak Miyod Shema Yehoreg, he was afraid he may get killed, Vayetzelo Shema Yaharog Esav Acherim, he was afraid he may kill other people. What are you afraid? So the Mephoshim asks, what are you afraid you're going to kill other people? Who's he going to kill over here? He's going to kill Habola Hargocha, Hashkem Lahargoi. If the other fellows are right, if you have terrorists who are trying to kill you, so why should you be? You should feel bad about the fact that you're going to kill them. If they're right, if they're a terrorist, it's a mitzvah to kill them. So the Marambi Prague over here has a famous comment in the Sefer Gur Aryeh. Gur Aryeh is a commentary on Pirush Rashi al Torah. Every so often he has a. Something unusual to say. So he has over here a line that every war in the world, you're always killing innocent bystanders. Every war in the world, innocent civilians. If they would only kill the soldiers, so that would be one thing. But innocent people always, citizens always get killed also. So he says, that's the halacha. That's the halacha. When you have a right to go to war, sometimes there's a mechemes mitzvah, and sometimes there's a mechemes rishus. Even in Mechemes Rishus, you have a teretzicha, you have a heta sikun, you're permitted to put your life into danger, to wage a war, you're permitted to kill the other people. That's why by Mechemes Rishus, you have to have Rishus from the Bez Nagorov to go to Mechama, because you need a heta teretzicha on the enemy, and you need a heta sikun to put your own life, put your own soldiers into sakonim. So not only is it a heta teretzicha on the roitvim, on the terrorists, and they, all the soldiers who want to come and kill you, unfortunately, it turns out to be had to ritzich on innocent civilians as well. He says, everybody knows in every war in the world that innocent people are killed. So that's included in the Het HaMelchama. So that's why Yaakov Avinu felt bad about that. Some of the Mefarshim say, it's not Poshe Pshat, some of the Mefarshim say, the Gemara says in the last stuff in Hurrius that Rab Meir was punished by the Tanoim, and they referred to him as a Cherem Oimrim, that they tried to depose Rabbi Gamliel. They tried to cancel his Nesias, so they're going to ask him a question in public to embarrass him. And then because Rabbi Meir was in on the scheme, so they penalized him. So later on, when they said over things in his name, they didn't always say B'Shem Amroi. You're not allowed to say Oymer David B'Shem Amra if the person is a Balaver. If the person, you only say B'Shem Amra if the person is one of the Balei HaMasoros. It because Rabbi Meir was trying to be Mavaza, the chief rabbi, Rabbi Gamliel, improperly. So that's why from that time on, you have a lot of Mishnahs where they quote Rabbi Meir. So Tosfos works on that. What do you mean? They never quote B'Shem Rav Meir. They always quote B'Shem Rav Meir. Once in a long while, they quote Acherem Omrim, and that's a reference to Rav Meir. But that's what it says, that they decided they're not going to quote B'Shem Omrim because he did something improper. They're going to say Acherem Omrim. So some say that Rav Meir, the Makoris and the Gemara, Rav Meir was a descendant of Gerim. Shem Yarag Acherim means he was afraid that he's going to kill Rav Meir. Rav Meir is going to be a descendant of Esav over here. So he was concerned, not Shem Yarag Acherim, he may kill other people. He's going to kill Esav, So what's going to be? He saw Biracha Kodesh, our mayor is going to be a descendant. That's a pshetl. That's not the real pshat of the Meshem Yargachem. He's afraid that other people, he'll kill other people. Why was Yaakov Avinu afraid? HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him he's going to protect him. The answer is he was afraid. Shema Yigram Hachet. Even though he was promised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to protect him, when he left in the beginning of Vayetzah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he's going to protect him. Nonetheless, he's afraid. Maybe he sins, and maybe he won't be worthy of that. So Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan has in the Hagdamah to one of his volumes, Kasha, on this famous Medrash, Shema Yigram Achet. He says, the Rambam quotes from the Gemara, the Rambam in Hilchos Yisrei HaTorah talks about Nevuah. He quotes from the Gemara Masechel Shabbos, that when a Novi delivers a Nevuah the Ra, like when Yonah delivers a Nevuah, Ora Boim Yom V'Ninveh Napachas, another 40 days, the city Nineveh is going to be destroyed. What was the end of the story? Nineveh was not destroyed. Why? Because it was understood, whenever there's a Nevuah the Ra, it's only if the people don't do tshuva. If the people do tshuva, then the Nevuah the Ra will be broken. So the Gemara, the Rambam quotes from the Gemara, that's only a Nevuah the Ra. Itself understood that it's Allah Tanai if they don't do tshuva. But in the Nevuah the Taifa is always going to be Mekuyim, and you can't say it's Allah Tanai. If everything is Allah Tanai, the Nevuah the Taifa and the Nevuah the Ra is Allah Tanai, so you can never tell if the fellas are Novi Emes or Novi Sheker. You can say it was Allah Tanai, and that's why it never was fulfilled. That's why it never materialized. So how could Yaakov Avinu be afraid? Shem Yigram Achet, and the Nevuah that he had, the Taifa, won't be Mekuyim. That's only Nevuah the Ra is assumed to be Allah Tanai. Nevuah the Taifa is absolutely going to take place. So what was Yaakov Avinu nervous? Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan answers that the question whether this is correct. So he answers in the Hagdamah to the Tshuvas. He answers that the only reason why Nevuah L'Toivo has to be absolute, that you can't assume that it's Allah Tanai, Mashman the Rambam, the Gemara like that, because otherwise how will you know whether the person is a Novi Emes or a Novi Sheker? Anything he says, and it's not going to become fulfilled, it says Nechumish. How will you know that the fellas on Novi are Sheker? If he'll predict the future, and it won't happen. So he'll say that it was Allah Tanai, and that's why it didn't happen. Everything is Allah Tanai. So the only reason why Nevuah L'Toivo has to be an absolute Nevuah can't be Allah Tanai, because otherwise, how do you know whether he's a Novi Evans, Novi Sheker? That's only if a Novi is telling me something. But here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Yaakov Avinu, and he told him in person, Yaakov Avinu doesn't have any doubts about himself whether he heard that prophecy from the Baruch Shalom. He knows the Baruch Shalom told him that. So there's no question, is he a Novi Emes? He knows he's a Novi Emes. He knows he had the Gilui Shechina. The Baruch Shalom told him this. So Yaakov Avinu was afraid. Maybe the Nevuah L'Toivo was also Allah Tanai. The only time in the Nevuah L'Toivo is not Allah Tanai is when a Novi tells it to someone else. And Nevuah L'Acherim, but Nevuah L'Atzmai, so that can be understood that that's also Allah Tanai. That's Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan's suggestion over here. So the pasuk tells a story that in the middle of the night, someone started to fight with Yaakov Avinu. By Vasi Yaakov Avad, it was all by himself. And by Yoav Keshima Aralos Hashachar, who was the one who was fighting with him? So the Haftorah says that it was a malach, and the Chumash doesn't really say. The Haftorah says that it was a malach. Who won the battle? It's also unclear. The Chumash, you get the impression that the malach won the fight. So the Haftorah says not so, that Yaakov Avinu won the fight. The Malach broke his leg, but the battle was won by Yaakov Avinu. And then it says, Al Kain, because of this incident, we want to remember this, La'yochel b'nei Yisrael is Gidon Asher. And that's supposed to eat the Gidon Asher, because that's the point where the Malach broke his leg. What are we supposed to remember over here? So the Radak, we used to the Pirush HaRadak on Nevi'im and on Tilim. But the Radak has a commentary on Chumash as well. It's very good. Pirushim on everything. So the Radak explains that Malach over here represents Teva, as the Gemara has, Ein lecho kalesa v'yesu melamato she'en lo malach melmaila hamako oso v'omo lo gadel. Every blade of grass has a malach who sees to it that the grass should grow. There are some, there are different kinds of malachim. So these malachim that we're talking about here, these are malachim of Teva. They see to it that the world runs based on the Bria and Sheshis Mebrashis. So when the Jewish people are up against Teva, so the Bnei Yisrael win the battle. That Bnei Yisrael are l'mayla min ha-Teva. Klal Yisrael should have disappeared a long time ago. So the answer is Klal Yisrael is l'mayla min ha-Teva. The Novi promises, Ani Hashem lo shenisi, it's in Malachi, v'atem b'nei akev lo chenisim. Just like God doesn't change, so too the Jewish people never disappear. And it doesn't make sense, but Derech HaTeva does make sense. The Maharal Prague writes, it doesn't make sense that any of us exist at all. Because Avraham Avinu and Sarah, the Pasuk says Sarah was Akara, and Rachel was Akara, and Rivka was Akara, everybody was an Akara. And then the Gemara adds on Yivam, is that Avraham Yitzchak were also Akarim. The husbands and wife, well, they were all Akarim and Akaras, and so they shouldn't have had any children at all. So the whole existence in the first place of Klal Yisrael is L'mayla min ha-Teva. So the continued preservation of Klal Yisrael is also L'mayla min ha-Teva. So that's what this represents. The Jewish people, look, we lost millions of people in the Nazi period. After the war, they said that 9 million Jews were killed by the Nazis. There's 6 million Jews where they kept records with the names and the addresses and the numbers that they put on their arms, but there were more than 6 million Jews. The 9 million Jews were killed. They didn't keep records on the other 3 million. And under Stalin, they killed some of these people. Under Russia, in the history of the world, they keep... Stalin was during my lifetime. Stalin and the Nazis, that was in my lifetime. And then before, all the generation, there were pogroms. So the Teva... When the Jewish people are confronted with a crisis, we lose a lot. We get a broken leg. The Medrash says the broken leg represents the Dor Shel Shmad, when the Goyim are trying to kill the Jewish people. But the Jewish people continue to exist. It's L'mayla min ha-Teva. So that's what we're supposed to remember by not eating Yirat Hashem. We're supposed to remember that. Klal Yisrael are L'mayla min ha-Teva. It is a Mishnah in Brachos that one is not permitted to be mispalef for a miracle. If you daven for a miracle, that's a tefillah shov. You have no right to ask for a miracle. So the Ramah writes in Hilchos Birchos Hamazon, the Gemara says in Perek Mamim Adlikin, the Gemara has all the dinim of Adlokas Neir Shabbos, and then the Gemara, the Mishnah has, and then the Gemara has all the dinim of Adlokas Neir Chanukah, Perek Mamim Adlikin. So then the Gemara has a discussion. The Chachamim made a takana to recite Allah Nisim in the Shemoneh Esrei in the middle of Moedim Anach Noloch. We thank you for this, we thank you for that, we thank you also we thank you for the Nitzochon of the Melchama. So the Gemara has a shayla, what about in Birchos Hamazon? Is it obligatory, is it a takana to recite Allah Nisim in Birchos Hamazon? And now the Gemara says, no, it's only a minig. You're not obligated to recite Allah Nisim, and it's a davar pashut that if a person forgot Allah Nisim, the Birchos Hamazon, he certainly doesn't repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. The halacha says even if you forgot Amar Nisim and the Shemoneh Esrei, but there is a takana, also doesn't have to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. The Gemara says only Yom Shiyesh B'Kar B'Musaf on Rosh Chodesh Chol HaMoed, if you forget to say Alav Yav, if you forget to say Haskaras Tush Zayim, so then you have to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. With the exception of Leil Rosh Chodesh, the Gemara has a special reason why. But Yom She'ein Bo Kar B'Musaf, let's say he forgot Aneinu on the Tanisi, but he forgot Al Anisim and the Shemoneh Esrei on Chanukah and Purim. So Yom She'ein Bo Kar B'Musaf, so then you don't have to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. But in Birchos Hamazon, for sure not, because Birchos Hamazon, the Gemara says, it's not the Takanas Chachamim at all. It's only a minig to recite Al Anisim. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, one forgot Al Anisim and on Chanukah and the Birchos Hamazon, you don't have to repeat the Birchos Hamazon. So then the Ramah says, but the minig is that after you finish L'olam Aleich HaSreinu, you finish the Birchos Hamazon, so then we say a lot of paragraphs of Harachman, so you should add on another Harachman, the Asalon and Nisim and the Flores, Geshem Shal Sitzel Avasenu B'Yamahem Ezban Hazeh, then you say, B'mei Matisyo Ben Yochanan Kain Godel, etc. So the Shari Tshuva quotes Akasha from his ancestor, I think from the Podimiris or someone. He quotes Akasha, how can you ask Harachman the Asalon and Nisim and the Flores? You should ask for, pray for a miracle. You're not allowed to pray for a miracle. The Mishnah says in Brachas, he pray for a miracle, it's a tefillah shov. You have no right to ask for a miracle. So he says that there are three exceptions to the rule. So one exception to the rule is asking for miracle on behalf of Klal Yisrael, because that's Klal Yisrael's and Maila Menateva. The whole existence of the Jewish people is miraculous, so that is permissible. Then you have in one of the prokim, I forgot already, the third parak, I forgot. One parak in Maseches Tainis, so the Gemara has, it's called the Pirke de Chassidi, the parak all about stories about tzaddikim and chassidim, tanaim and amoraim, who pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for miracles, and every time the miracles occurred, how were they permitted to ask for a miracle? So the Shari Tshuva quotes the answer that the unusual tzaddikim are also, just like Klal Yisrael, alamayim and ateva, so unusual tzaddikim are also alamayim and ateva. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu had the Asik with Korach, so he says, in Bria, Yiv Hashem, Upotzeso Hadom HaSpio. So Rashi quotes from the Gemara, in Bria, if this is the Piho Oretz, is here from Sheshis Mevishis, is good. In Lav, Yiv Hashem, he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, make a miracle, make Piho Oretz should open up over here, and Korach Lados should be swallowed up. And that's the Haftarah Parshas Korach also, the way I think Yiftach is praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should make a miracle. It's unusual. Shmuel prays that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make a miracle. Unusual tzaddikim have the right to ask for a miracle because they're also l'mala menatev. So he has, so the Shari Tshuva there has the three klolim, that the klol Yisrael are l'mala menatev, he permitted to ask for a miracle, and unusual tzaddikim, you see, from the Gemara, permitted to ask for a miracle, and they ask, of course, for a miracle that's not l'mala menatev, there's a nes nister, but there are hateva, so that you permitted, that's all of tefillahs like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs his world, everything is an eis nister, everything, that's Hashgacha Pratis. There's an eis nister, so there's always Hashgacha Pratis. Everyone has a right to ask. I remember once I visited in Ponovich Yeshiva. We were married a few years, we didn't have any children, so we visited Eretz Yisrael to be blessed with children. We were blessed with wonderful children. So I remember when we spent a few days in Bnei Brak. So they davened mincha in the yeshiva, and they were saying tilim because one of the people in the kollel had cancer. He was sick. So you saw in front of the beis medrash, the mashgiach was Reb Chatzka Levenstein at that time. He was an old man. He was already very short, and next to him was Reb Shmuel Razovsky, who was much taller. So Reb Chatzka didn't want to say tilim. So everybody saw the way Reb Shmuel Razovsky leaned down to him. He was much shorter than him, and he whispered something in his ear. So he said, okay, then he said the tilm. So he said afterwards, what happened was, he didn't want to say tilm. He was so, the fella that was saying tilm before was so deathly sick. So he said, you're not allowed to ask for a miracle. What right do you have to ask for a miracle? So Shmuel Razovsky leaned down to him, and he said, no, he has the same kind of cancer that so-and-so had, and so-and-so was treated, and he got better. He survived. So he also, b'derech hateva, he stands a chance of having a refuah. He says, okay. The Mashgiach said, okay, b'derech hateva, that you're allowed to ask for that. Someone came up to me yesterday, he tells me, his grandmother's deathly sick, mom, she's holding my hand, I should be mispal for her. Mispal of what? I didn't ask him mispal of what. I daven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have rachmanis on her. Rachmanis sometimes means she should die in peace. She shouldn't suffer. She should die faster. And so I don't know if the grandmother's still alive. She could be, she died yesterday. So how can you ask for, you can't be mispalal for a chayla unless you know that the chayla is still alive. What do you ask for? So if you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have rachmanis on the chayla, even if you don't know, maybe they died. So that's acceptable because we say in the davening, v'chay meisim b'rachmim rabim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do tchias ha-meisim b'rachmim. So you can ask for a meis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have rachmanis on the meis. He should do tchias ha-meisim. He's going to do tchias ha-meisim on all of the meisim. But to ask for a person who's deathly, deathly sick, he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make a miracle, he should survive. That's not right, unless the person is such an unusual tzaddik. He asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have rachmanis on Pliny. Rachmanis sometimes means he should die in peace. He shouldn't suffer too much.
A person has a sickness that we don't yet have a cure for. So, Zemutet Davin, the Bishop of Refuah Shleimah.
It looks like it's you're asking for a miracle. So you should ask for Ban Shalom Shav Rachmanis on him. So Rachmanis sometimes means the cure should be discovered, should be developed. Sometimes Rachmanis means he should die in peace, whatever. The Ban Shalom knows which way the Rachmanis is. I don't think it's right to ask for a Refuah Shleimah. We don't know.
I think you should do all those Misha Payas.
Mishat Berach, you say for a person who's a little bit sick. So you say Rav Cholim L'chaim. Rav Gosis from the Misa, Rav Cholim L'chaim. So you have a right to ask. That's not asking for a miracle. But if a person is mamish deathly sick, Rav Gosis from the Misa. So what are you asking for a miracle? That the person should survive. That's not right. Should ask Baruch Shem Shav Rachmanis on the Cholim. Not Yisrael from Herifu Shleim and Hashemayim. That Racham Olaf. You can leave out the next line. The Zohar has a comment over here. Vayav Gishima Adalos Hashach. Adalos Hashach refers to Bias HaMashiach. That the Geula will come like Alos HaShachar. There's a Yerushalmi like that. Just like Alos HaShachar, the sky is pitch black at night, and then Kima Kima, a little, it starts to become a little lighter, a little lighter, a little lighter. So to the Geula Asira will be slow in stages. So that's referring to Yemos HaMashiach. So there are some who claim, Rabbi Shlomo Levilna has like this in his Sefer, Binyan Shlomo, Rabbi Shlomo Levilna, we said, is the one who was the Magia on the Vilna Shas, the late 1800s. He and his older brother, Rabbi Tzal Vilna, were Dayonim in Vilna. He was a genius, his brother apparently was a super genius, a genius on top of a genius. So he has, in the beginning of his Sefer Binyan Shlomo, he has comments on the Chumash, some whole section, what he heard from his father, and then he has a whole section, his own comments, interesting. So on this pasuk, he quotes this passage from the Zohar, that there's room to say that when Mashiach comes, Gid Anoshe will be mutter. Gid Anoshe is only also till the days at Bias HaMashiach. That's what the followers of Shabtai Tzvi were convinced of. They were convinced that Shabtai Tzvi, who was a faker, Shabtai Tzvi converted to Islam in order to save his life. So, and then all of his followers were so gullible, they were so convinced that he was the Melech HaMashiach, so they all converted to Islam. There's still people today who believe in Shabtai Tzvi. There are groups in certain parts in Europe. They still will swear by Shabtai Tzvi, but most of them already disappeared. So at that time, the followers of Shabtai Tzvi were so convinced that he was the Melech HaMashiach, so they started eating Gid Anoshe to demonstrate that Mashiach came already, and you're allowed to eat Gid Anoshe. It's based on this passage, Ad Alos HaShachar, until Mashiach comes. Vayav Kishima represents that the tzoris that the Jewish people have by Olam Hazeh until Mashiach comes. You're only not allowed to eat Gid Anoshe until Mashiach comes. The Pashtus is that the Rambam writes Gid Anoshe is one of the 613 mitzvahs, and the Rambam writes the 13 principles of faith. One of the Ikori Hamun is that all of the laws in the Torah are binding throughout all the future generations. So the Pashtus is the Rambam probably would not agree with this passage in the Zohar. It's not going to change. Not going to say that the Mos HaMashiach is going to be mutter to eat Gid Anoshe. There's room to say not so. There's room to say here it says beferish in the pasuk. It's one of the mitzvahs, but it says beferish that it's only till Yemos HaMashiach. Yeah, but still, why did the Rambam count it as a mitzvah? The Rambam writes that the term mitzvah, Rambam writes the first half of the Sefer Mitzvahs, the Rambam has the 14 sharoshim, 14 klolim, the guiding principles that determine what belongs in the minyan of mitzvahs, what not. So the first klal, the first sharosh he has is that you only include mitzvahs deraisa. You don't include mitzvahs derabbanan. Then the second klal, he says, you only include mitzvahs that are noig l'daris. Whatever is only harashua doesn't belong. How does he know? Because that's what the Tanoim say. Rashi, in the beginning of Parshas Tzav, quotes from the Sifro, from the Torah's Kan. Ein loshen tzav eloshen ziruz miyadu l'daris. If a mitzvah is only noheges l'shua, not noig l'elam void, then by definition, the term mitzvah is a technical term. The term mitzvah means that it is binding throughout all the future generations. So the fact that the Rambam included it in the Minyan HaMitzvahs, the Pashtun says that he doesn't agree with this idea that they said based on the Zohar. See, it's interesting. Rav Shlomo Levilna and Sefer, he doesn't write that the followers of Shabtai Tzvi ate Gid Anoshe to demonstrate that they were convinced that Mashiach came already. He just writes when the Zohar would appear, perhaps that when Mashiach comes, then Gid Anoshe is going to be mutter. Doesn't write that there's a chunk of history involved over here. Yeah, what's the story with the Gid Anoshe? So the Gemara has a machlokes hatanaim. There's a whole pair of Gid Anoshe. The Gemara has a machlokes hatanaim. If you cook flesh in a pot and you have some non-kosher flesh there, so there's a klal of tam kiker, then the Sinas Tam will spread, unless you have shishim and heter against the yisr, the Sinas Tam will spread and make everything else straight. The real din of tam kiker is when you have mimish edamina, when you're cooking a piece of chazer schmaltz in a pot of vegetable soup. So the vegetable soup tastes like vegetables, chazer schmaltz tastes like schmaltz. So when you have mim shein amina, two different flavors, then you need shishim to make sure that there's no nesina stam. What if you cook in flesh and flesh? That's mim b'minos and min ha-Torah. How can you apply tam kiker? There is no nesina stam. It has the same flavor. So that's midirabbanan. That even mim b'mino, lach b'lach, you have to have shishim midirabbanan. So I'll call upon it. The Mishnah has this machloike satanoim. What if you cooked giranosh and atpat together with kosher food? So the Mishnah says that it asses everything. We paskin not like the Mishnah. We paskin ain't the gidden b'nois and tam. That giranosh aids the alma v'atoro os rosa. That's the losh on the Gemara. It doesn't have any nesina stam. The Torah prohibits it even though it doesn't taste like food. Akzeris akosuf. Torah prohibits it even though it doesn't taste like food. How much giranosh do you have to eat in order to get malchus? So the Mishnah says, if you eat a kazayas, some animals that get on nosha is going to be fatter than it. Depends how gigantic the animal is. The Mishnah says get on nosha is only noig be behemo bechayas, not noig be oifos. Because it says it's only also get on nosha asher al kaf hayorech. So the oif doesn't have a kaf. So the Gemara says it's not true. The oif also has a kaf. The Gemara says no, it has a kaf, but it's not ogul. The only time Giranosha applies is if the kaf is ogled, or if it's not ogled. So the Gemara has a sofik, a teku, a sofik. What if you have a behema v'chaya where the kaf is not ogled? What if you have an oif where the kaf is ogled? Is it Allah? It depends on behema v'chaya, because normally the kaf is ogled. The bottom bone is round on top and it goes into a socket on the upper bone. So the kaf is ogled goes in. So would you say that if you have an oaf where the kaf is ogle, it'll be osir? You have a behema v'chaya where the kaf is not ogle, it'll be muta? You say no. Because normally the kaf is ogle by behema v'chaya. Normally it's not ogle by oaf. So it depends on behema v'chaya versus oaf. So that's a sofik in the Gemara. Gemara says teku on that. The Gemara says mikra din, only the chelik of the giranosh runs down the whole length of the leg. The rest of the giranosh is not os. Only asher al-kafa. Only that part of the Giranosha that goes al gabi hakaf ha'ogul. So the Mishnah says if you eat a kazayas of the Giranosha, you get malchus. Like kazayas of anything that's straight, you get ma'achila. But if you eat let's say you have an animal which has very little Giranosha, you eat a whole Giranosha, that's al shera al kaf ha'yorech. So then the Mishnah says that you get malchus because that's called the beria. If you eat, that's a Mishnah in Makkos. If you eat a berry or shlema, let's say you swallow a whole bug, and the bug is a tiny little ant, it's less than a kazai. But it's a dover sholem. So dover sholem has a din of a berry. And there's malchus on that. So that's what the Mishnah says. The gidon osher has a din of a berry, even though it's not a separate animal, it's part of a big balchai. But that part of the balchai is called the gidon osher. Tosis says, what's the definition of a berry? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Tosis in Siman Kuf. If you cut it in half, it doesn't have the same title that it had before. If you have the whole Giranosh, it's called Giranosh. If you cut off a piece of it, so it's a part of the Giranosh, you don't call it Giranosh. So if you eat the whole Giranosh, even though it's less than a kazais, you get malchus, that's a barrier. And if you eat a kazais from a gigantic Giranosh, also you're loike. Because I say, after you eat turka de achilos pras, so that's a shayla. What's called terka de achilas pras? Pras is a machlekes hatanoim, and a shayla in Shulchan Aruch how we paskin. Pras is either gimel beitzim or dalet beitzim. Now, what's the ratio between a kazayis and a beitza? So that's also a question whether there are two kazayisim in a beitza or three kazayisim in a beitza. So how much is kazayis terka de achilas pras? Let's say you have to eat kazayis matzah on Pesach night terka de achilas pras. How long is that? So it's the amount of time that you will be able to eat 12 kazaisim. You can eat so slowly. If you eat matzah on Pesach and you eat a kazais on matzah without pausing, that's kazais tochkei d'achilas kazais. You didn't pause at all. Just eat normally. You don't have to rush to swallow it quickly. You have to gulp it down. You eat it normally. That's kazais tochkei d'achilas kazais. And if you eat so slowly that you could have eaten either, let's say if you hold that there were three kazaisim in a beitza, and there are four beitzim in a pras, four beitzim in a pras, that means the amount of time you could have eaten 12 kazaisim. That's an awful lot of time. If you hold there are two kazaisim in a beitza, and there are only three beitzim in a pras, then it's two times three, so it's the amount of time, it's one, So then it's six. So then half the amount. Either the amount of time it would take to eat six kazesim, the amount of time it would take to eat 12 kazesim, or in between that, any other combination in between that. It's an awful lot of time. So that's so the Minchas Chinuch on this week's Sedra, on Parshas Vayishlach, talks about this. How long is kazeis toch de'achilos pras? So there's a shaila if you're drinking hot coffee or hot tea. What is the shir tziruf? So the that's a machlokes. The Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam says revius toch de'shtias revius, and the Ravid says it's against the Mishnah increases. Mishnah increases says it's revius toch de'achilos pras. The shir tziruf should be achilos pras. So they quote this machlokes in Hilchas Yom Kippur when a chayla has to eat pachas mikashir. So what's the shear? It's on Yom Kippur, the shear is not revius, the shear is Malay Lugmov. Is it Malay Lugmov Beli Havsoka Klal? Or is it Malay Lugmov Turka De Achilas Pras? So they say one should be Machmer to wait. You should wait the amount of Achilas Pras. So how long is Achilas Pras? So the Mishnah Bura quotes from the Chasam Sefer, 9 minutes. What are you giving a shear 9 minutes? 9 minutes is for all foods, the shear is 9 minutes. That's what many poskim assume. It's a flat shear for everything. Some say it's 3 minutes, some say it's less than 3 minutes, a different opinion. Mishnah Berurah Kol said it's 9 minutes. That's what usually the Choylem on Yom Kippur, so the Rabbanim tell them they should eat pachas, pachas, mikashir. They should pause 9 minutes in between one eating and the other eating. Where'd they get this from? So the Gemara says, by nichnas labayis hamenugat, so raz batim, if a person enters the bayis, so if he walks in and he walks out, he becomes tummy right away. But the begotten that he's wearing don't become tummy. If he, well, how does it say? I forgot already the pasuk. If he, the pasuk says ho'echol babayis, if the person enters the bayis hamenugan, ho'echol babayis, if he eats there, not only is he tummy, even his begotten are tummy. So the Gemara says it doesn't mean ho'echol babayis. Pasuk doesn't mean if he eats there. Means he walked into the Bayis HaMenuga and he was shoya so long that he could have eaten kedei achilas pras. Ashoya b'bayis achilas pras, not only is he tummy, even the rings of the begotim that he's wearing, the watch, everything becomes tummy. Otherwise only he if he walks in and he's carrying the clothing in his hands, he becomes tummy and the clothing becomes tummy right away. But if he's wearing the clothing, then the clothing is batel agabi gufo, unless, and the clothing will not become tummy right away unless he's shoya kedei achilas pras. So achilas pras of what? So he's not eating anything. He's only shoya babayis. So there the Mishnah says, shoya babayis kedei achilas pras pas chitim meisav eichel beliftan. How long would it take to eat a pras, which he did means 3 beitzim or 4 beitzim, of pas chitim, bread that's made from wheat. Bread that's made from barley takes is stickier, so it takes a little longer to swallow. Bread that's made from chitim, you swallow faster. Mesa ve'echel beliftan. How long would it take to eat it? Not dry bread. You dip it into some salad dressing so it'll be liquidy, so it'll be easier to swallow down your throat. And you eat it in the form of haseba, so you'll eat it further. That's how the Mishnah says. So the classical poskim all assumed that that's the shear. Echel pras pas chitim, mesa ve'echel beliftan. That's the shear k'dachilas pas for everything. And that was where they had this machloikas. How long is it? Is it 3 minutes? Is it 2 minutes? Is it 9 minutes? Is it 12 minutes? And the Mishnah Berurah says 9 minutes. He quotes in the Chasam Sofer in Hilchos Yom Kippur 9 minutes. So the Minchas Chinuch thinks that that's not correct. He thinks that shear, Eichel pras pas chitim meisav eichel beliftan, that's only by the shoyeh bebayis hamenuga that he's not eating anything. But if the person is eating, so it depends on what he's eating. If he's eating chazer shmaltz, how long would it take to eat a pras of chazer shmaltz? If he's drinking a liquid, how long would it take to drink a pras of this liquid that he's drinking? And there's even a machlekes, and he proves it, because there's a machlekes achreinim, if you're drinking burning hot tea or burning hot coffee, so is the kdechilus pras, how long it would take to drink coffee or tea that would be at room temperature, or the coffee or the tea, the way it is right now, that is burning hot, where you have to pause to take a sip at a time. So you see mefurish, men chaskin, say, see mefurish, that the poskim are assuming that kedei achilas pras depends on each and every individual maichel. It's not one flat shear for everything. They just argue, is the amount of time that it would take to eat this maichel in its present state, in the burning hot state, the amount of time that it would take to eat it if it would be room temperature. But you don't give the same shear achilas pras to all oichlim.
Is it also based on the individual person? say I'm not good at digesting wheat or whatever, so I usually take it slow. So would that extend the shear?
I don't think so. I think it depends on probably Odom Beinoni. Most of the shirim depend on Odom Beinoni. Once in a while it doesn't depend. Let's say the shear of shok de ligmas kula. If you pause in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei so long that you couldn't have finished all Shemoneh Esrei from the beginning to the end, so then it ruins the Shemoneh Esrei and there's no tzir. Shok, at least l'chatchila, it passes. Some hold the Medievet, it passes by the Shemoneh Esrei. So there it says, one would have thought that it depends on the Odom Beinoni. How long would it take? Some people take an hour for Shemoneh Esrei. Other people take half a minute for the Shemoneh Esrei. So one would think that it depends on the Odom Beinoni, the average person. I think that says in Shulchan Aruch that doesn't depend on Odom Beinoni. But I think this din over here, Kdechut is pas. I think it depends on an Odom Beinoni, the average person. It doesn't depend on each and every individual person. The Mishnahs have certain shurim, let's say, Loilugmav. The Mishnah says depends on each person individually. If one has a bigger mouth, has a bigger shurim, Loilugmav. Or let's say when you do Kmitza. So Kmitza, each Kohen, it depends how big his fist is. You can't just take a shear for a kohen. So malachavnov on Yom Kippur, malachavnov there is samim daka. Mishnah says it depends on each gadol how big his hands are. Because there, how much is malachavnov? But I would think that I think over here that kedachilas pras should depend on an odem beinoni. I think so.
Would the shear of kedachilas pras also apply to a beria, or is it, would there be different time slot? Or how long you need to get an
option. Beria, the Gemara says you have to swallow it in one shot, I think. What if he chews it? If he chews it, chilka bebefnim. That's a machloikis and get an option. Machloikis abyechna meshlokish. Let's say the guy has an ant and he starts chewing it. So if you have an ant and it's cut and then you swallow the whole ant, then it's not called a beria. It has to be sholem. What if you put the ant in your mouth? You have a dead ant. You put it in your mouth and start chewing it. So before you swallow it, the achila is when you swallow. When it's in your mouth, that's not achila. What if chilka bebifnim? You put a berry of shlema in your mouth and then you chew it there. So that's a machleg zabiachna reishlokish. So I think we passed him that it is mitzdarif, yeah. So you probably would have the shear for the achila's props. Probably would also apply there. Probably would also apply.
Isn't there a bracha shayla when a person like has a beria which is less than his eyes, where they're supposed to make a bracha on that?
Right.
So then, like, that's only talking about where if they don't chew it, if they don't chew it, like say they have a blueberry, so it's less than his eyes.
We paskan chilka mibifnim. If you chewed it in your mouth, then it still has the din of berries. As long as when you pop it in your mouth, it was shalom, even though you chew it, it's still considered a berry. I think that's how the machlokes abyechem ishlokish. We pass on it is called a berry. The Babli never says a word about berry. My Babli says beria is benegir to that you don't need kazais in order to get malchus for eating macholos asuras. And a beria loy betelo. If you have a berry and it gets mixed up again, it gets mixed up with other gidin that are mutter. So that's a din that beria is a davar chashuv and it's not bottled with the rabbanim. And I tell you, everything is bottled. Beria is not bottled with the rabbanim. That idea that if you eat a beria, you say bracha achrayna even though it's not a kazayis. Tesa quotes that from the Yerushalmi. So that's a din in the Rishonim. Should we pass on like that Yerushalmi or not? Yerushalmi says, let's say you have a tangerine or you have an orange, and there's a tangerine is smaller than an orange. Let's say one section of the tangerine that has a membrane around it, has a peel around it. One section is called the beria. One beria is called the beria. So that's a diun that we pass like that la halacha or not. So we really don't. It's a sofik brachas lahalacha. It's not so posh. Yeah. Because the Bavli never says that. That's only in the Yerushalmi. When Yaakov Avinu was preparing to meet Esav, so he was afraid they had a cham for Esav. So he has everybody's mishtachle. So it says he first goes, the shvachas went first, v'leo v'yoladeha achreinim, v'rochel v'yoladeha achreinim. Rashi quotes Achron, Achron Chaviv. Yeah, Rochel was his favorite wife. So he had them go last. In case Esav will want to kill the first, so he'll kill. Whenever you send soldiers, so the first battalion stands a better chance of getting killed. Well, the first group of soldiers go into battle. He didn't know whether the brother is going to kill him or not. Didn't know what to expect. So he arranged the machnas like that. So that's we mentioned, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, that the Tosi Zontif in Mishnayis Demai writes that someone asked him a question: how can we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash whenever we daven Musaf? We pray HaKadosh Baruch Hu should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and we should have an opportunity to be Makar Karbonis again. The Novi Chagai says B'nevuah, when they're building the second Beis HaMikdash, Godliya Kvod HaBayis HaZeh HaAchrei Min HaRishon, this, the last Beis HaMikdash, will outshine the glory of the first Beis HaMikdash. He says, the second Beis HaMikdash is HaBayis HaZeh HaAchrei, this is the last Beis HaMikdash. So what are we praying? Baruch Shalom should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi said, that's it. So the Tosi Yontif quotes that they asked him this question. Probably not, Apikoros asked him the question. So he answered that the word Rishon and Achron in Biblical Hebrew doesn't always mean first and last. Sometimes Rishon means prior, and sometimes Achron means latter. As it says, Ach b'yom Rishon tashbis esor mibateichem, does mean that on the first day of Pesach he burned Achron. It means on Erev Pesach, the day before Pesach. B'yom HaRishon means the day before Pesach. And here he quotes from this pasuk: Le'ev yaldecha achreinim, last. V'rochel yaldecha achreinim, last. So how can it be le'ev yaldecha achreinim? So achreinim means afterwards. It doesn't mean last. So too, when the Novi says, Goli ha'kvod ha'bayis ha'zeh ha'achrein, it doesn't mean the last Beis HaMikdash. It means this, the latter Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to the first. This is the next Beis HaMikdash, but the Nevi'im promise will have a third Beis HaMikdash also. And then he quotes also the pasuk in the beginning of Chumash Mos, when Moshe Rabbeinu is going to give the Nevuah to Paro, that he should let Shalach HaSamei V'Yavduni, so he has to prove to Paro that he had a Nevuah. Paro's going to say, he's making it up from thin air. So he gives him two oises. He gives him the ois that he should put his hand in his chest, and it should turn to Tzaraz, then it turns back to normal. And then he takes the mata and he throws it on the ground, turns into a nochesh, then he picks it up, it turns back into a mata. So the Rabbeinu Shlom says, if they won't listen to the kol ha'os harishon, they mean the kol ha'os ha'achron. They'll listen to the last os. They mlay amin the kol ha'os ha'achron, well, kach me ha'yor. And then it will turn into dam. But he said that's the kol ha'os ha'achron. The kol ha'os ha'achron, the two oises already. So what do you mean, another, a third ois? So you see that the word achron over there also, like over here, achron doesn't mean the last, means the latter ois. So that's what, there's a famous line that there was a chassidish rebbe, the Rishna added on. The pasuk says that when they shechted Pesach Mitzrayim, v'yadam lechem li'os al abatim, they should put the dam on the outside of shtem mezuzos v'al hamashke. Rashi says it was on the inside, it wasn't on the outside. Rashi quotes in the Mechilta, the dam was on the inside. So that when v'loyav amashchas al batechem, when makas b'choris will occur at chatzos halayla leil Pesach, so the mashchas won't cause the b'chorim of Bnei Yisrael to die. So the pasuk means v'yadam lechem leos al abatim, the dam on your bayis will be an oath that the mashchas shouldn't cause the b'chorim of Yisrael to die. That's the pasuk pshat. So the Rishna tzaddik, the Rishna said, the dam was the third ois that Moshe Rabbeinu was given, not the dam on the bottom. First he had the ois of the hand turning into tzaraz, then he had the ois of the mata turning into a nochesh, then the third ois was the dam. But it already says, so you see that this dam comes after the ois achron, that the word achron doesn't mean last. So hoya dam lechem leos al abatim on the bottom mikdoshes. That was the word, that was the pshetl from the Rishna. The dam, the fact that dam was a third ois after the ois achron is a simon, is an indication, a proof that the word achron in biblical Hebrew doesn't always mean last, it means latter. So that's what it means in the pasuk in Chagai, that gorliya kvod habayis hazeh achron min harishon, achron does mean last, it means this latter Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, that's the famous ois sofet that the Rishna added on to that Tosis Yontif. It's a Maseches Demai, that Tosis Yontif. Oh yeah. What this? Hayadam lechem leos al abatim. Okay, interesting. They misrepresented the Vilna Gaon. They quote somebody pshetlach and vertlach. They think the Vilna Gaon was like Chassidish Rebbe, only saying vertlach. The Ruba, what the Vilna Gaon said, he just said over a shas of poskim. He just had everything in front of him. Then he said a couple of vetlach also. So they made him into a little vetlach. That's not the Chassidish Rebbe's. That's all they're known for. But the Vilna Gaon is known for the Uri Agro. He had the whole Kolat Terkula in front of his eyes. Yeah. The Medrash points out that when the family was all by Yishtachwe, everybody's bowing down to Esav, to Arachan for Esav, everybody's bowing down. So everybody bowed down. All of the Shvatim were born already except for Binyamin. He wasn't born yet, so he didn't bow down. Then the Medrash points out that the Beis HaMikdash was built Bechelko Shel Binyamin. So the Medrash says that he was the only one that didn't bow down. He was the one who was born in Eretz Yisrael. So the belt assumes that these two are connected. The Jews are lima chutz l'oritz. I have to always come for the goyim. Otherwise, we won't survive here. Yankiv and Esav, you have no choice. You have to come for them. Mutalach nevshayim boilam hazeh, because suffix sarkanas nefoshes. But when you have your own independent Medina, Binyamin was born in Eretz Yisrael, so the Jews in Eretz have to be like a sabra, tough. You're not supposed to be a korea mishtachve to the umas oilam. You have to have a different psychology. If you have your own government, so you have to act like the United States. You have to act like Britain. You have to act with Stolzkeit, with arrogance a little bit to a certain degree. So that was Binyamin. Binyamin was the only one. He wasn't born yet. He was born in Eretz Yisrael. All the others are born in Chutz Lords. So he was an Israeli. So he was not Korea Mishtachwe. He didn't bow down to Esav. And that's why the later on Shechina was built. The Beis HaMikdash was built. The Chelkos Shel Binyamin. Rashi quotes the famous Medrash, V'dina Hechen Hoysa. It says that all of the 12 children of Yaakov Avinu were all bowing down to Esav. So where was Dina? She was already born. How come she didn't bow down? So Rashi quotes the Medrash that he put her in a box, in a teva, and he nailed the box, and he was punished for this. Yaakov Avinu was punished. It's interesting, the Mesilas Yesharim writes about Zahiris, a person has to be careful not to sin. The whole Sefer Mesilas Yesharim is based, he writes an introduction, based on the Agadate, on the Avchof in Maseches Avodah Zarah. Pinchas ben Yoyer says that Torah Mevila de Zahiris, when a person learns Torah, he will develop Zahiris, Zahiris will develop Zrizus, and so on. One leads to the other. It has all the chapters of the different milas. So the Mesilas Yesharim writes, Umina Zahiris, a chelik of the Zahiris is, a person shouldn't exaggerate the zahiris. A person stay away from an averbachi. He shouldn't go 20 miles away. You go a couple of feet away from the aver. Let's say you're afraid you're going to fall over the cliff. So don't stand near the edge of the cliff. But you don't have to stand 20 miles away from the cliff. That's too much of a zahiris. So min zahiris is shalala hizar yosemidai. If a person exaggerates, so then it's going to have a negative outcome. That's what happened over here by Dina. Yaakov Avinu exaggerated a little too much. So then what happened was that she was later on raped by Shechem ben Hamor. You have to protect your children. So that if you have an exaggerated chinuch for your children, it's going to come out kakad. You have to give a proper chinuch. You shouldn't expose them to all the possible things in the world, but they should know that there are things that are terrible going on in the world. You lead a two sheltered life. You lock your daughter up in a box and you bang all the nails down. So what's going to happen at the end of the day? Vatetzedina is going to be attacked by Shechem ben Hamor. That's what the Chavisav. That's what the Mesilas Yesharim says. Amen Azahir says Shalola Hisoher Yosemidai. Can't be too much. Yeah, the Gemara says we're going again about Gidon Osher. So the Gemara says that. Only the Gidon Osher is also the Shumer Agid is Mutar min HaTorah, but it's also Midi Rabbanan. So there's a Rambam in Hilchas Korban Pesach, where the Rambam says when you broil the Korban Pesach, you're not supposed to slice it into lamb chops and then broil each lamb chop separately. You have to broil the whole Korban Pesach intact. Rosho al Krov al Kirba, you broil everything together, and then you slice it later on. You make the lamb chops later on. So the Rambam writes that before they broil the Korban Pesach, you have to remove all of the chelev because you want to burn the chelev on the Mizbeach. and you have to remove all the chutei dam. If you're going to broil the Korban Pesach with the dam, it'll make a treif. You're broiling the flesh with the dam. You have to remove all the chutei dam. But you leave the Gidon Osher there. And then you remove, after you broil the Korban Pesach, then you remove the Gidon Osher. Make sure that nobody eats it. Why do you have to leave the Gid on Asher there? Because Rosh Baal Karol Baal Kirbay, the correct way to broil the Korban Pesach is the whole thing should be intact. So the Ravid writes his style of the Hasog on the Rambam. If I would be there in the Beis HaMikdash and this guy would bring his Korban Pesach, I would throw it on the floor and tell me you're not allowed to eat it. What did you do, Meshugana? You broil the Korban Pesach with the Gid on Asher and made the whole thing treif. You see, Chof Telefon of the Karka. I would throw his Korban Pesach on the floor, tell him he's not allowed to eat it because it's treif. The taket zepela, what's pshat in the Rama? So the Kesem Mishnah says, there's a machleke satanayim and shemifor, where the yesh begin b'naisen tam, ain't begin b'naisen tam. So we paskin yeredeya, and simakuf, ain't begin b'naisen tam. Gid on Asher doesn't asa the rest. So the Ramam holds, there is a mitzvah, rosh ha'akral ba'akir, we're supposed to broil the carbon pesach intact, the whole thing of Dov Shalom. So since the Gid on Asher doesn't ask there if you broil it together, so the correct thing is to broil it together, then to cut it out later on, to make sure that nobody eats it. But the Kesem Mishnah asks, that's Nicha on the Gid on Asher, ain't the Gid Menos in Tom. But the Gemara says that the Shumar HaGid is also Mid Rabbanim. So Shumar HaGid is a Gzera Mid Rabbanim, also Mid Rabbanim. What is the Shumar HaGid? Or to what? What's the Chashash? They asked it in the Torah spot. So there's machlekes and rishonim. Is it shumar agid is otu gid on Asher to make sure people don't eat the gid on Asher? So the machme, even the fat on top of the gid on Asher also you can't eat. Or shumar agid is exero otu chelov. So that's a diun in rishonim. Some rishonim say it's otu chelov, and most assume that it's otu gid on Asher. So Tosis also assumes Tosis and per gid on Asher assumes gid on Asher. The shumar agid is exero otu gid on Asher. So Tosis has two opinions. Gid on Asher itself doesn't answer, we assume there's ain't begidden but I said tam. If you cooked it with kosher food, it doesn't make the other stuff treif. It doesn't have a flavor to cause nesinas tam. The shumar agid does have. The shumar agid is fatty, so it gives a schmaltzy flavor. So maybe I should say that since the gid on asher doesn't answer, even though the shumar agid is awesome rabbanan, maybe it also should not answer. It can't be mochomer. The shumar agid can't be mochomer than the gid itself. So that's one opinion of Tosfos. That's not the accepted opinion. We paskin Gid on Asher doesn't dasa, but the Shumar HaGid is Mohammed and the Shumar HaGid does us. So the Kesem Mishnah is that Kasha and the Rambam. That's in Shulchan Aruch. This comes up halacha l'maisa. This issue comes up halacha l'maisa. They told me around 20 years ago, some Jewish organization was having a convention in Washington or something like that in a hotel. And they had a Kasha, the Treif Kalim. That they used in the place. So usually when you kasher, when you do Hagola, you have to wait till it's Eina Ben Yomo. So the Shaila was, there was going to be a Boy Scout convention on the same day, earlier in the day, and this kosher organization, this Jewish organization, was going to have their annual dinner at night on the same day. How can you kasher if it's on the same day? So they decided that the caterer was going to make sure that the Boy Scout meal is going to be kosher. They won't die. They won't know the difference between the kosher and not kosher. So they ordered kosher meat. But the only shaila was, they didn't want to cut out the gid on asher, because by the goyim, they like to serve the whole thing the way it is. So the shaila is, well, the gid on asher does make treif the pats, and the gid the medosh and tam. But the shaila was the shumar agid. So we pask and the shumar agid does asher. 2 days in Tosfos. And the Rambam holds like that opinion, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that even though the Gid on Asher doesn't answer, Shumar HaGid does answer. So that solution to the problem didn't work. They couldn't have them serve kosher food because they weren't going to cut up that piece of the animal that has the Gid on Asher, but the Shumar HaGid. So the Kesem Mishnah asks on the Rambam, he defended the Rambam in Hichos Korban Pesach. You don't have to remove the Gid on Asher because ain't the Gid Meras in Tam doesn't make treif the rest of the Korban Pesach. But the Shumar HaGid does make treif. So how can the Rambam write, you broil the whole Korban Pesach the way it is, then you remove, you just cut out the chelev that you have to be makdar on the Mizbech, and then you cut out the Chutei Hadam that it shouldn't make treif, the whole behemah, mitam yisadam. Why doesn't it require you have to cut out the Shumar HaGid? Because the Shumar HaGid is yesh b'shuman b'nois in Tam. Will also the rest of the Korban Pesach. That's the Kesem Mishnah's Kasha. And his answer, he defended the Rambam from the Ravid's Kasha, that the Gid on Asher doesn't ask, but the Shumar HaGid does ask. So he gives an answer, he gives a Mechudishdik answer. He's, the Prima Gordon quotes this line from the Kesem Mishnah, that the Loshan HaGemar per Gid on Asher is that min HaTorah, le'asa Torah elo, the Gid on Asher, the Shumar HaGid is also. Then the Loshan is, V'Yisrael Kedoshim Nogu Bo Iser. It doesn't say that they yased it midrabban. It's a minig. That's what the Kesem Mishnah answers. Not to eat. Jumaragid is only a minig. It's not even an Iser midrabbanon. And then the Kesem Mishnah says, and what do you do when there's a conflict between a minig and a real din? On the one hand, there's a minig, you don't eat Shumaragid, and Shumaragid asses the rest of the Korban Pesach mitam minig. On the other hand, there's a mitzvah men haTorah, lachatchil at least, Rosh Al Kral Bal Kirva. It's supposed to broil the Korban Pesach intact, not supposed to slice it into lamb chops before you broil it. You should slice it after you broil it. So here there's a conflict between a minig and a real din. So the din takes precedence. So that's what the Kesem Mishnah says. All year long, there are 354 days in the Jewish calendar, so all year long, 353 days of the year, we have the minig, we don't eat Shum and Agid. But on Leil Pesach, everybody eats Shum and Agid. We all violate the minig, because the minig is in conflict. The minig not to eat the Shum and Agid will be in conflict with the real din deraisa of Rosh Al Kroah Val Kirba. So on Pesach night, in the Beis HaMikdash, everybody violates the minig not to eat the Shum and Agid, because it's going to give an Asinus time. So this became, who is going to know about this Rambam? Hilchos Korban Pesach, no one's going to know. So there was a big Talmid Chacham, Rabbi Yisrael Gustman, at a very young age, he was a dayan in Vilna, together with Rabbi Chaim Eisen. What happened was, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's son-in-law was a dayan in Vilna. And when he passed away, he had a young daughter, who was something like 18 years old. She was looking for a shidduch, so they decided, the girl wanted to marry a big Talmid Chacham, so they decided, if the Talmid Chacham, if she'll succeed in marrying a Talmid Chacham, who's royal kach, so they'll make him the dayan, take over the spot of the father-in-law. So Rav Gustman married the girl. He never learned Shulchan Aruch. He just knew Gemara. He knew a lot of Gemara. So he had to brush up. He had to start learning Shulchan Aruch quickly, but he was a super genius. So they appointed him a dayan in Vilna. So he survived the war. That was right before the war. He survived the war. He was running away in the forest and so on. All kinds of stories. So then he came to America. He was in Siberia for a few years. So he didn't learn for a couple of years, but he's a genius. So when he came to America, he got back to himself and he was famous. He gave shurim. And then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He had a yeshiva. He passed away already, but his yeshiva is still there. Chov Ramban, I think. So he published a lot of his shurim. I think they're called Kuntrasei Shurim, Rav Gustman. So at the end of the Sefer on Kiddushin, he has a tshuva halacha lama. He usually doesn't have tshuvas, but he was on Rav Chaim Moshe's bezin. He was a poisek also. He gave shurim and he was a poisek also. So he has a tshuva halacha lama. What if a woman has a short period? Instead of having a period of 35 days or 45 days or something, she has such a short period that by the time she goes to mikveh, she won't be able to have a baby. A woman can only become pregnant a certain number of days in the month. You can become pregnant whatever you want. So what if the woman has such a short cycle that by the time she's going to go to mikveh, with all the chumras that we have, you need shibin akim, that's a chumra, so then she won't be able to have a baby. That's called halachic infertility. She's not infertile, but halachically she's not able to have. So Rav Gustman writes that sometimes the observance of the Shiva Nikim is only a minig. And if it's only a minig, and then the husband has a mitzvah piravirabia, so if there's a conflict between a minig and a real din, so then the minig goes. So in these rare cases, the woman doesn't have to observe Shiva Nikim. So that's a question. When is the observance of Shiva Nikim a minig, and when is it really a takana? Rebbe made a takana. Sometimes it's a real takana, and sometimes B'nai Yisrael Achmira Alatzman. The Gemara says that's only a minig. Hechad nog nog, hechad lo nog, lo nog. So when is it only a minig? So that's the detail that he talks about. So that's why this Rambam and Ravid in Kesem Mishnah became so famous, because Rav Gustman quoted it in his psak, that if the Shiva Nikim is only needed mitam minig, and that's what's blocking her ability to have children, then the piravirivya takes precedence, the real mitzvah takes precedence over the minig. The Netziv has a tshuva about this in the Meshiv Dover. He quotes Gemara in the first Perek in Brachas, but the Gemara says, Harogel lovel abeis on Knesses, if a person always comes to Minyan, and one day he doesn't come, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to shoil all of it. Baruch Shalom is going to ask, how come Pliny didn't show up to the Beis Medrash today? So if he didn't show up because he went to a Dvar Mitzvah, so then fine. But if he didn't show up because he decided he doesn't want to daven in the Minyan anymore, so then he's going to be punished. So the Netziv interprets the Gemara. He says, there is, strictly speaking, there is no obligation to daven tefillah b'tzibur. It makes sense, the Gemara says. Kodesh Baruch Hamoyis b'tfilos harabim. You stand in bed, what are you daven? You want the Rebbeinu Shlom to listen to your prayers. So the Gemara says, we have a tradition from Tanakh. You stand a better chance of having your prayers answered in the affirmative if you daven tefillah b'tzibur. So it makes sense you should daven tefillah b'tzibur, but strictly speaking, you're not really mechuyev to. But the Gemara's lashon is mishirogalov lebeis haknesses. If his practice is he always davens tefillah b'tzibur, so minik toiv is binding mitam neder. So the Gemara is talking about a minik toiv. Harogalov lebeis haknesses. If he does the minik toiv of always being mocked with the daven tefillah b'tzibur, one day he doesn't show up. So then the Rebbeinu Shlom is going to ask, how come he didn't show up? So if he violated the minig, ledvar hoshus, just to make more panosa, that's not right. The minig is binding, medirabbana mitam nera. But if the minig of davening tefillah b'tzibur became a conflict to a real mitzvah, if it ledvar mitzvah, then it's okay. So the Netziv says, that's what the Gemara said. When a minig is in conflict with the real din, so then the din takes precedence, and not the minig.
The husband's shu is not exactly the same. By the husband, he has a way out. Get divorced and marry someone else from the
kindness
mitzvah, as opposed to the carbon where there's no other choice but
to eat all things. Okay. Correct. You are right, but he thinks it's still good enough to allow one to violate a minute. It's still good enough.
Does that mean it's also to go on a vacation if you know you're not going to be able to daven over the
minyan? That's correct. That's ledvar hashus. You really shouldn't. Even if the person doesn't have always the practice of always davening tefillah b'tzibur. A minig is if the person did it once and he plans to do it always like that, or if he does it three times in a row, he wasn't thinking one way or the other. So let's say a guy davens Shachris Mincha Maariv three times in a row tefillah b'tzibur. So then he's mechuyev to daven tefillah b'tzibur. The minig is binding mitam neder. He's mechuyev. Minig mitam neder is only midirabbanan, not minator. That's a gemara in the Dorim Dav Tezvav. Meaning, bitam neder is mendirabon. There's a difficult chasam sefer in the tshuva. The days of the chasam sefer, that was the beginning of the reform movement. So they first started by picking on minhagim. They were changing minhagim. So they didn't like it that the chasam wears a kittel. And they didn't like it that the kala walks around the chasam. So they were picking on minhagim. They started to do away with minhagim. So the chasam sefer was very upset because one thing is going to lead to another. So he said, they're picking on minhagim. Meaning is deraisa, meaning it be tam neder. If you have a din, the rabbanon sveka, the rabbanon lekula. Suffic meaning is lechumer, because meaning is menator. So, punkt from so many hundreds of tshuvas of the Chasam Sefer, so many tshuvas the Chasam Sefer writes fakert. He writes the reverse, that there are din of deraisa, din of the rabbanon. Meaning is lower than a din of the rabbanon. And this one tshuva he writes that meaning is binding menator, because meaning is tam neder. It's very difficult. The Gemara says befer is meaning mitam neder itself is only mid the rabbanon. So from all the Chasam Sefers. Pischitshuva and Yeridei quotes that Chasam Sefer. It's a difficult Chasam Sefer. Yeah, but let's say a person three times in a row he davens tefillah b'tzibur. So then even though he wasn't thinking one way or the other, the minig mitam ned, it becomes mechuyev, midirabbanan to daven. It's self understood that once in a while, let's say a person, you have a minig to do something. A person has a minig. Once in a while, it's self understood that he won't be, it's built into the minig. Then on a rare occasion, he's not going to observe the minig. It was going to be a shas hatchak. You don't need a hataras and dorm. The only time you need a hataras and dorm for a minig is if the fella decides from now on, Mikanel Abo is not going to observe the minig at all. But if once in a while there's a shas hatchak and he has to violate the minig, so the dogum above on the side of the Yeridei writes that that's self understood as if it's a clause that's built in into the minig. That if a shas hatchak will come up, he won't observe.
What
about the mitzvah d'oraisa
getting married during
Sfiras
Omer,
and
the
minhag
saying
you should? We always set the wedding date. So, let's say the mother-in-law is expecting a baby, or the sister of the kala is expecting a baby. So you always set the date in such a way that you navigate, you negotiate when you're going to get married. So the guy, when he gets engaged to the girl, so pick either before sphere or after sphere. You don't have to get married in sphere. The meaning is that we pick a different time. I remember years ago, let's say a guy would be going to the army and he wanted to get married before they would get married in the middle of sphere, because he had no choice. He's going to go away in the army. He wants to be married before he goes. He shouldn't have a yetzahar for a nachris. It wasn't so strict years ago. Now there's no draft. Maybe that's why now there's no drift. So then it says no ami. So it never comes up. But anachanami. When you're picking the dates, so you should avoid getting married in the sphere. But if it's if there's no choice, then you do get married in the sphere.
So is it self understood that now and again someone might go on a vacation where they can't get to a minyan?
I don't think that's right. Once in a while, let's say a guy comes home from a wedding and he missed the ma'ariv, so you go to a minyan at 12:30 minyan in the dormitory or something, at the 1:30 minyan in the dormitory in the middle of the night. So that's too difficult. So if it's too difficult, so then he can violate the minyan and daven tefillah b'yachid, not tefillah b'tziva. But why should he go take a vacation in a place where there's no minyan? Pick a place where there is going to be a minyan.
Is the Kusman also assuming that it's okay that he violate the minyan for someone else's mitzvah?
Right?
Else
right, that's what he says. The husband can have a different wife and have the children. The wife doesn't have the mitzvah period of you, only the husband. The husband can divorce his wife. So that's unreasonable. That's unreasonable. Even though it's not exactly the same.
Would Guzman say that the only touching that would be allowed would be l'shem peru room, but any other physical contact in Saman Nikia, you know, would be, like, basically it's a hutcher at the chuyah at this point?
No. They can't. She goes to the mikveh. She's going to go to the mikveh earlier than otherwise. Normally, she has to wait. She's been a kimitam minig. Sometimes it's a minig, sometimes it's a derabbanan. So you have to ascertain when is a minig, when is a derabbanan. But whenever it's only a minig, so we allow the woman to violate the minig, she goes to mikveh earlier. She goes to mikveh earlier, so she's muteris lebailah.
Wouldn't it be
asher
for the person who can't marry the wife off for a chal against her minig gershom, and he can't marry two wives again against her minig gershom, against the wife's wishes?
It's
clearly EF Charles. Okay, now we're down 10 years. And now the children. Yeah. And would that apply also to the midst of Shabbos? Person already had a boy and a girl, and they wanted to have more children? Good question. I don't know. You got to give that some thought. I don't know. The Chumash tells a story by Reuven that he did an Avera of Gilead Arayis. So the Mishnah in Megillah at the end of the third parak, last Mishnah, writes that Maisa Reuven Nikra V'loi Mitargem. You shouldn't say the Targum Unkelis on the Pasuk, because Unkelis translates the Pasuk literally, and the tradition has it that the Pasuk is telling us an exaggeration. Is not to be taken literally. He did a chutzpah dika act, but it wasn't this, and the Chumash is exaggerating. So you shouldn't read the Targum Unkelis, because the people will get the mistaken impression that the pasuk is to be, the Targum translates the words literally. People will have the mistaken impression that he did this avera literally. Same as the Gemara says regarding, the Gemara Shabbos says regarding Bnei Eli, it says that they slept with the women, Eshes Ishan, who came to the Mishkan Shiloh. They came to bring Korban Yoledes. When a woman has a baby, say after the Malos is up, either 40 days for a boy or 80 days for a girl, so they have to bring a Korban Yoledes. A lot of times the women would come and they would bring a Korban Yoledes. And then it says that they would violate Eshes Ish. So the Gemara has a tradition that Pasuk and Navi is exaggerating what the Aver was. It wasn't Boal Eishes Ish. They would be lazy. They wouldn't be. A woman would come half an hour before the Shkia with a Korban Yoledes. So they would say, sorry, come back tomorrow. So the women would be detained in Shiloh overnight another day like this. They wanted their Korban to be brought already. Then they wanted to go home, travel home. And like this, they had to stay overnight. And they would prevent them from going back to their husbands a day earlier than they could have gone back to their own husbands a day earlier. So the Pasuk exaggerates the Avera of the laziness of the Bnei Eli, that the Shofos Anoshim Atzov is Pesach, Mishkan Shiloh there. A lot of times in Tanakh like that, the Pasuk describes someone as doing an Avera, it's an outrageous Avera. The tradition has it that it's an exaggeration. All the stories in Tanakh, we don't really understand that. So 98% of all the stories is missing. And a lot of times the story is an exaggeration. So you have to have a tradition to know what pshat is. The Mishnah says even though Maisa Ruvain is Nikra Velo Mitargim, but Maisa Yehuda Betomar is Nikra Umitargim. That you can, you may say the Targum Unkelus, because that story is to be understood Kipshuto. The end of the Sedra, you have all of these Edom Lochem Shamochu, the Edom Lefneim Lo Melch Levnei Yisrael. Why in the world does the Chumash write all of this? Why does the Chumash write all of the descendants? Ela told the Seis of Abi Adam. What do we need all this for in the Chumash? The Rambam writes in the Mor and the Buchim, why do you need this? To tell you who Amalek is. Because the Chumash is going to tell you later on there's a din of Machias Amalek. So you have to know who is Amalek. So Amalek is this, the biological descendants of this person, Atelet Leliva says Amalek, that's who Amalek is. That Rambam in the Mor and the Buchim seems to contradict what Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said. That Rav Soloveitchik said years ago when the German government offered reparations money to Medina Yisrael, and they offered reparations money to individual people who lost their job and lost their money taken away by the Nazis. So there was a whole debate in the Knesset at that time whether it's proper to accept the reparations monies. And then he said it's unethical that as if we're forgiving the sin of killing all of the Kedoshim in the war by our taking the money, as if they're paying kofar and that's it. They get a kapar. We shouldn't mislead them into believing that they're getting a kapar. So Rav Soloveitchik spoke, I remember at the Mizrahi convention at that time. I was a little boy at that time. I was before Bar Mitzvah. And my family lived in Philadelphia, and my parents sent me to New York because the day school of Philadelphia. I went to Beth Jacob, that was a co-ed school. So I think the school ended, I think, fifth grade or so, no, sixth grade, whatever. I'm not sure exactly what grade it ended. And all of the religious parents who wanted their young children to have more Torah education, most of them went to Baltimore. My classmates learned in Baltimore. Rabbi Yochanan Zweig from Florida was a classmate of mine, and Beth Jacob, this co-ed school. And my parents sent me to New York because I had grandparents who lived in the Bronx. My grandparents lived in the apartment building that was adjacent to Rabbi Chalap's father's shul. The Bronx Jewish Center was a gigantic shul. So I always complained I didn't like my grandmother's cooking. And my grandmother spoke Yiddish. She spoke a Galatiana Yiddish. I was always making fun of her. And I was always upset. I was always crying. I wanted to go home. So every couple of weeks, my father had to come into New York to take me home for Shabbos to calm me down. So I remember once we were going to go home on a Thursday night, and the buses only leave. That we were going to go home by bus. The buses don't leave so late at night. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was speaking that night. So if my father would have picked me up after Rabbi Soloveitchik's talk to the Mizrahi, we would not get a bus or maybe a train, I forgot already what it was. We sometimes went by bus, sometimes by train. So he took me as a little boy, must have been 9 or 10, I don't know. He took me as a little boy to hear Rabbi Soloveitchik speak. And then we went to take the bus to go home to Philadelphia. So I remember that's what he spoke about at that time. He thought he was encouraging the Knesset that they shouldn't accept the reparations money from Germany. He said, number one, like the members of the Knesset said, that we have no, it's unethical, we shouldn't mislead the German government into believing that they're getting a kapara, an atonement for killing so many Jews. And then he said, number two, this is printed, and then he said, number two, that he heard from his father that the Rambam writes in Hilchas Malochim that there's a mitzvah, hachrim tachrimim, you have to wipe out the Zayin Huma. So the Rambam says, kvar rov adzichum, they don't exist anymore. Bas hacheret bil, bas kol olam kuloi, so there's nobody left from the Zayin Huma, so there's no longer any din of hachrim tachrimim. Then when the Rambam quotes the dinim of Amalek, he doesn't write Kfar Rabat Zichram. Why doesn't he say over there also, Bos al Cheret Bilbas Kol Ha'amkul, so there's no more Amalek? So in the Sefer Chinuch quotes from the Rambam as if the Rambam wrote it by Amalek also, Kfar Rabat Zichram. So the later Meforshim point out, it's not true, the Rambam never said it by Amalek. Because the Gemara says that Bo'el Amazeh, we don't pronounce Shem Yud Kevav, we pronounce Alav Dal Nun Yud. Lo Kishem Shani Nichtav Ani Nikra Lo Si Lovoi. We will say love it. After Amalek will be wiped out, it says Kiyod al Keska, Mochamal Hashem ba Amalek midor dor. So Boel Mazek calls Man Amalek is Kayam, So we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Koh, but we don't pronounce Yud Kei Vav Kein. Lo Si Lova, when Amalek will be wiped out, it'll be Hashem Shalom Hakisei Shalom. Hashem Hashem will be pronounced Yud Kei Vav Kein. So we don't pronounce Yud Kei Vav Kein. We assume Amalek is not yet wiped out. So it's not true what the Sefer Chinuch writes. Kvar Rabat Zichrom by Amalek. The Rambam only said it by the Zainumis. But why? You should assume Kvar Rabat Zichrom. It's true. Bosu Chavit Bil Balas Kolam Kula. How can you identify who's Amalek? So that's where Moshe Soloveitchik came up with the Chiddush Pshat in the Rambam. He thought that the din of Amalek is not restricted only to those who are biological descendants of Amalek. And today Sedrin Vayishlach, any nation who adopts as its policy that they want to wipe out the entire Jewish people, the pasuk in Tehillim, anyone who adopts such a position, and the loyore elokim, and they're atheists. So the Nazis were atheists. The rest of the Germans were not atheists, but the Nazis were atheists. So they have a din of Amalek. So he thought that Amalek are not allowed to take anything from Amalek. He thought that even though he's just getting back part of the money that the German government stole from the Jewish people, Rav Soloveitchik thought that that should be included in what his father said. They have a din of Amalek. That was a chiddush. Then years later, he said, what happened was the Knesset approved it, that they did accept the money. They used all the German reparations money to pave all the highways in Eretz Yisrael. So it turned out that it served quite a purpose. Rav Soloveitchik said privately, years later, apparently he was wrong. That Min HaShamayim, apparently, the whole cheshbon that he made is not correct. That it turned out historically that the German reparations money was necessary. But then years later, they wrote the newspapers that all the highways were paved incorrectly, and they had to rip up all the highways and spend money to pave the highways all over again. So it's a question whether he was right or wrong.
Would this din apply to, let's say, Hamas, whose charter says, as a policy, they want to kill all the Jews, but they're very religious, they're not atheists?
I don't think so. I think it's only below Yari Alekim, only if they don't fear God, if they're atheists. Well, I think when Rav Soloveitchik said it in the name of his father, so he didn't mention this, but I think Rabbi Gershuni, Rabbi Yudel Gershuni, was a prominent figure here in America. He learned by Rabbi Shimon Shkop in Grodno. He was one of the Rabbi Shmuel Rozovsky and Rabbi Yudel Grodno. Rabbi Yudel Gershuni, these were the two of the outstanding Talmidim by Rabbi Shimon Shkop. So later when he came to America, he married the daughter of Rabbi Lezer Silver. He used to sign his name Chasna Adei Nasiya. He was the son. Rabbi Lezer Silver was the president of the Agudas Rabbanim. He let everybody know that he was the president of the Agudas Rabbanim. So Rabbi Yudel Gershuni, he used to sign his name Chasna Adei Nasiya, the son-in-law of the chief rabbi of the United States. So Gershuni published a beautiful sefer on the Rambam, Hilchos Malachim. What's it called? Mishpat Hamlucha? I think it's called Mishpat Hamlucha. I think it was reprinted. Very good sefer. Goes Keseda. Every perik, every halacha in the Rambam. So he quotes this, I think, B'Shem Rav Chaim, this word about Amalek. He adds on this word, only below Yori Alekim, only if they're atheists. If they're not atheists, none. That's the question. Yeah, at the end of the Sedra, so the Rambam and the Mor Devuchim writes like that the reason why the Torah writes the descendants of Esau, we should know how to fulfill the mitzvah of Mechiyas Amalek. So from the Rambam it sounds beferish, not like Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said. One of the Soloveitchiks in Yerushalayim said this over in his Shiurim, that you see from the Rambam and the Mor Devuchim against Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Okay. Yeah, so why? And then you have Elam Lach Shemochu Beretz Edom. What is the significance of all of this? And Kabbalah, there's a lot over here. Something about Shviras HaKelim. They have a lot to say about these Malachim. Remember, the Rav once held the drasha on this too. I don't remember one word that he said. It was all Kabbalah. I don't know. These names, you have Baal Chanon. You have two names. So you have Bas Mezahov. Mezahov, two names. So we mentioned. The Ramah in Hilchas Gittin has a chumrah. Let's say a person has two names, Yankev Yisrael, and he's divorcing his wife. So the Ramah has a chumrah, you have to write the two names on the same line, because the Gemara says that when you write a Sefer Torah, you have to write Kedola Omer on one line. You can't write it on two lines. So that's the question. How are you supposed to write Gedol Olam? It's supposed to be one word, or it's supposed to be a pause in between? It's supposed to be two words. Is there a space in between? We write it as one word, Gedol Olam, but we don't have any break in between. So of course you write it on one line. In English, when you write a word, you come to the end of the line, there's not enough room for the rest of the word. So you put a hyphen, and you finish the word on the next line. In Hebrew, there is no such klal. So if you have a long word like Gedol Olam, you have to write it all on one line, davar pashut. But there are others in Masorah, there are Sifrei Torah, where they write Kedor La'omer as two different words. And still the Gemara says in Elo Trefes and Chulin that it's supposed to be written on one line. So it's based on that. That's not our tradition. Our tradition, Kedor La'omer, is one word with no space in between. Of course, on one line. But the others have the practice to write Kedor La'omer in two words, and still you should write it on one line. So if the man's name is Yankev Yisrael, you should write it on one line. So then if you have a Sefer Torah and it has Mezahav on two lines, as it has Bal Chanan on two lines, that will also be an issue. You should learn from such a Sefer Torah, Lechatchila. Yeah. Yeah, in Eretz Yisrael, there's this big issue, keeps on going, Gir Ka'alocha. If you megar people without a Kabbalah on mitzvah, so the Geris is meaningless. The Rambam has a strange line. The Rambam has all the dinim of Geirus and Hilchas Yisuri Biyah. You're not allowed to marry a non-Jewish spouse. And he says, unless they convert, so then the person is Jewish. So he has all the dinim of Geirus. So then the Rambam writes one line that the Kabbalah on mitzvahs is not miyakev. How can it not be miyakev? It doesn't make any sense. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik said. Rav Moshe Feinstein quotes from his father like that. And Rav Chaim Oizer writes like that. All the poskim say the same thing. The Rambam never meant that. How can it be Kabbalah Samit and not Miyakev? People pilpul about this, but it's ridiculous. It's nothing to pilpul about. If you don't have Kabbalah Samit, so it's Ika Chosma Seif. What the Rama meant was the dramatic Kabbalah Samit that the person is in the mikvah up into his neck, the man or the woman, and then you review the mitzvahs the moment before they're about to be tovel under the surface of the water. So that's not miyakev. The drama is not miyakev, but you have to, the bezin has to know him in advance. They have to work with the person. I have to interview him in advance before he's megar. They have to know that he's mekabel ol mitzvahs. Yeah, the ger is not mekabel ol mitzvahs. It's a goy gomer. It's a goy gomer. There was once a case over here. A non-Jew converted, then he was a character. Then he married a very wealthy girl from Rabbi Joseph Lukstein Synagogue from KJ. And then in the middle, she was in Mishteh, and the girl wrote over all of her bank accounts, joint accounts with her husband. And then in the middle, she was in Mishteh, he disappeared. He just cleaned out all of her bank accounts and he disappeared. So Rabbi Joseph Lukstein came to Rabbi Soloveitchik. He said, what do we do? What do we do? Rabbi Soloveitchik asked, after the goy converted, did he keep any mitzvahs? Did he daven and shul? Did he bench? He didn't keep any mitzvahs. He didn't keep any mitzvahs. He said, there's no kabbalah on mitzvahs. There's nothing. Nothing. The day after he converted, didn't keep any mitzvahs at all. When we are Megayer people, so the day that they're Megayer, you have to, the Bezin has to be Bayom. The Bezin has to be Bayom. So Geris always has to be Bayom because they need a Bezin. So right after the Geris Mizgai has to put on tefillin. Has to say the Brichas Shlosani Isha Shlosani Goy Shlosani Yom. Has to say all the brachas, not Yotze, but the brachas that he said in the morning. He wasn't Jewish then. He has to say the brachas now that he's Jewish. And if one eats a sandwich, he has to wash until he dies. He has to say Birchas HaMazon the same day. He goes to the bathroom. He has to say Asher Yotzar. He has to start observing mitzvahs right away. Yeah, the ger converts, doesn't keep any mitzvahs. Zero, there's nothing. Shaila Gemara says in Yevamos, a ger shechozer l'suro. A person converted, and then after many years, he goes back to his original religion. So there we treat him like Yisrael Mumer. We say the gerus is valid, and he's like a Jew who's not observant. But if the same day that he converts, he doesn't never kept anything from day number one, so there never was a Kabbalah on mitzvah, so there's nothing to discuss. Of course, there's no gear. So that's in today's sedras about the gear, Shaloi Kahalocha. The Yankov Avinu told the Chamor, Shechem ben Chamor, he told the father and the son, I can't let my daughter marry a non-Jew. If you'll convert, then I'll let my daughter marry you. So they took it, if we'll do bris milah, if we'll just do circumcision. And that doesn't mean circumcision. You have to do bris milah and believe in monotheism and believe that Eretz Yisrael is there weren't so many mitzvahs at that time. There were hardly any mitzvahs. But he has to be mekabel all mitzvahs. He has to accept monotheism, which they didn't accept. So it was a gir shaloi kalacha. So that wasn't a geiris. So that's why they killed them all. They weren't Jewish. The whole thing was a fraud. That's the parsha of Girush Aloy Karloch. The Svasemis points out that this parsha of Ayishlach is about the confrontation between the Jewish people and the Umas Olam. This is like the parsha of Golus. Here, Yaakov Avin is coming back to Eretz Yisrael. But it's like the parsha of Golus when you're now in Eretz Yisrael also. They're confronting the Umas Olam. So this parsha doesn't have any psuchas hastumas from the beginning to the end. Doesn't have any hapsokas at all. Hapsoka means that you pause. It starts with a psucha and it ends with a psucha in the middle and no pauses at all. Till the whole encounter is, not till the end of the parsha, till the whole encounter is over with Esav. Because he can't be Mesiach Das. He can't pause in the middle. The Jews have to be vigilant from the beginning to the end. He can't pause when you're dealing with the Umas Olam. You have to be on your toes from the beginning to the end. You can't have any Hesed Das. That's the famous comment from the Svasemis. Yeah. Okay. We have to thank the Rabbanu Shel Olam, Mizma L'Soida, that we have a democratic country here where they have freedom of religion. In other countries, there's no freedom of religion. They're still forcing the Jews to convert. They had in the paper last month, some Arab country in the Middle East, they're going to force all the Jews to convert or to kill them all. We have to be extremely thankful that we have a wonderful country here.
Thank you for the same day.